When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back,
goal! All right, welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Dylan White. You're not the master of the robot any longer. You have a new title, and that is Grand Champion of Fantasy Baseball. If you haven't heard, Brian Slack, who is also joining us today, and Dylan White took down the NFBC main event. If you're not familiar with the NFBC, it is the National Fantasy Baseball Contest, a championship. It is the largest fantasy baseball contest, I'd say, of its kind. It's the largest high stakes contest of its kind. I would say that winning this contest probably comes with as much awards and accolades and celebration as any. To kind of draw a parallel here for those of you that are listening that are unfamiliar, it would probably be like taking down the World Series of Poker for fantasy baseball. I think that's probably what the equivalency is here. But Dylan, Brian, welcome to the show, guys. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Good as always.
Chipper as always. Really.
So I wish we had a photo here, but you were talking a little bit about this off air, and I thought it might be an interesting jumping off point. But if we took a picture of you guys like July 4th, or for you Canada Day up there in Canada, Dylan, and we compared it to Monday morning, was it like, would it be like a presidential like photo? Like when you see the president when he's first elected and how young and vibrant they look. And then by like at the end of their third year, they're like completely gray and like wrinkled. Was it like that? Like, have you guys aged just from the stretch run here? I would imagine the last 2 to 3 weeks had to be like, especially the last week, but the last 2 to 3 weeks as this chase was happening, that had to be incredibly stressful. Either of you can take this question.
I obviously my voice is shot. I think the last month was pretty intense. I was not getting a lot of sleep, and then my wife and daughter were a little bit sick before I went to the Bay Area for the weekend, and I think I was able to hold it off until then, but as soon as I got back, I've just crashed, and so my voice sounds terrible. So I will let Dylan do most of the talking, but in terms of aging, I think I did say at one point that I look like Jeff Van Gundy in game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Just bags under my eyes, barely hanging on, pretty much across the board.
And now your hands also sore from high-fiving everyone you pass on the street. Is that Brian Slack?
Yeah.
I think we got to first just at the end of August, like August 30th or something like that. And we've been trying to hold on, and we had some of our worst like offensive weeks in those first like 3 weeks of September coming to the final week. And it was very difficult and very stressful. And like the fab decision seemed like so important it was very stressful. I was waking up very early in the morning and just thinking, like running through my head of like decisions we made or should have made. And just wonder what the weather's going to be like in all these cities as our opponents had like two steps and all that stuff. So yeah, very difficult, but rewarding in the end, I guess.
Was there a point, because you had like not a huge lead, but you had a decent lead going into the last weekend. I know I was sort of tracking it and Googling on my phone, main event leaderboards. Was there a point where you felt like you had it, like even on Sunday or even on Saturday? Because once you get to this point, obviously, and you're stressing about every game, you're pretty meticulous, and I'm sure you probably are fairly well aware of who your opponents are rostering at that point. And the other thing I'll ask about this too, just kind of as an add-on, with the two, three guys that were kind of in the mix there at the end, were there any common players between the four teams?
The last, so second through eighth kept changing. Like those guys, one guy would have like 175 point, which is good day. And like pass a bunch of guys. And then the next day he'd drop 40 and then someone else would jump. Guys who were like second and third and who we thought were our main competitors at the beginning of September ended up kind of dropping back to like sixth and ninth. So I was tracking the starting pitchers for the week that they had. And a couple guys had Tanner Scott. We did not have Tanner Scott. So Brandon King, actually, the guy who finished runner-up, saves were kind of his best category. And he had five closers going, including Tanner Scott. So when he went on paternity leave, for example, it was a huge shift in sentiment. And then when he came back after one of the games was rained out, so he didn't miss as many games as we'd hoped, it was like, oh, no. We're back in the crosshairs. but I don't know. Brian, do you have anything to add? I don't even remember the initial question.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dylan, this should not surprise anybody, is super vigilant and like, okay, how are we under attack? How can we lose points, right? And so he would come up with these like just rosters and the SGP or like points gained for each home run, or in Brandon King's case, like every save, right? So like, here's how many potential points he has. And obviously, like, nobody's going to hit every potential point that they have. But when you're looking at all the potential points a team has at the beginning of the week, right, at the beginning of that last week, there was definitely no feeling of we had this even remotely wrapped up. I think that was I think we probably felt better, Dylan, correct me, like 2 weeks prior to that, you know, kind of like mid-September. And then we did feel a little bit better on like, I think, you know, maybe Friday and Saturday started to feel a little like, not that it was definitely secure by any means, but maybe a little bit better. But Monday, I think it was a pretty low and shrinking lead and very susceptible, including who was the guy that had all the starters? Was that Ian Khan and Robert Mershak?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They had nine starters and every win they got would be like 30 points and they were only like 250 back. And it was just, I could see the catastrophe scenario playing out. And I was very panicked about them.
So most of my job, Jeff, was to kind of just like be the emotional kind of, you know, barometer and kind of just like bring it and like just try to like focus and try to, you know, focus on what we could control and just try to have a little fun with it. So that was my big contribution.
Yeah. And the other question I had was, were there any common players like hitters, pitchers between yourself and those teams that were in the hunt? Like just consistently common names just for our listeners. It's always interesting to hear, I think.
I mean, there were a couple with Strider up there. And I think a really interesting subplot or development that happened was at one point when we were in maybe the top four or five, I think there were at least three or four teams that had Ohtani in the top 10, which was, you would have thought Acuna. There were no Acunas that I know of in the top maybe seven or eight. But there were at one point there were maybe four, I think, Ohtanis in the top 10. So, you know, he went down obviously with the injury with about maybe a month or 6 weeks to play. And then when there was Strider, there's some Yandy Diaz in there.
I think Corey Seager was on a couple of our guys. Like we had him and then also a couple guys had him. But I think the Acuna, like no one having Acuna who are in the top just kind of blew my mind because you'd think that it's like everyone has Acuna, everyone has Strider, everyone has Bobby Witt Jr. or something, but it was no Acuna, which I think is very interesting in how like the roster construction plays out during a draft. I guess like maybe he was a third pick overall or something. I don't know what his ADP was. And then I guess coming back, you don't have a good selection of like starters maybe by that point. I don't know. It was weird the way it kind of played out.
That is kind of interesting because I would imagine that in your more standard like 12 team roto leagues that having Acuna was probably fairly valuable, but I guess it's all on how you play it throughout the year, of course, and what you pair with that player. But the 40-70 season you would think would do some heavy lifting, but not so much in this the stolen base environment. But let's back it up a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about initially the draft strategy. How did you guys feel coming out of it? What was sort of the approach? What do you think were your strengths that sort of carried you through as well? Because I'm sure there was some positives that you could take away.
I haven't quite, Dylan, I didn't really connect. We were just sweating the last like week so much. So I'd kind of like to hear Dylan's version of how the draft went.
Yeah. So, I'm the type of person who sweats the draft. I'm huge on like optimizing and getting all the value. And that doesn't really work in a, like when you have a minute on the clock to make a decision, or else it just kind of magnifies all the anxiety. So what happened was, this is my recollection of how it went. Brian had three teams that he had entered already, but he kept getting a bad draft slot. Well, not a bad draft slot. He got a common draft slot near the back. He had like pick 12, pick 14, pick 13, and he wanted to have at least one team that had a like an earlier draft slot. So he did this fourth team, this unsound methods team. He said, "I'm going to do one more because I need to get a pick like not in the back because I'm sick of it." It ended up being pick 15. So it all started off like badly of like not being able to get what he wanted. And what happened was his third team's draft was like 2 hours before this unsound methods draft. And so he asked for me to be on the phone with him to watch the queue and the draft room, because he's going to have both like drafts open. And when it was our turn, like give him a heads up. And like after we had some targets that he had put together of like who he wanted and kind of a strategy of how he wanted it unfolding. He had like guys he wanted in like red and guys he didn't want in green or whatever. And it was like, after we make a pick, I would fill the queue for who we expected to come back to us and who we were going to target next. And it was like, I was just in awe of how calm he was. Like, I'm panicked and I'm just filling the queue. And this guy is like, "Oh, hold on a sec. Hold on. I'm just going to make this pick here. Let me see here. Yeah. Bing." And then he comes back. So where are we? I'm like, "It's 52 seconds. are we taking Eflin or what?" And he just, "Let's go Eflin." Like totally calm. Like, it's just like the experience of being in these high stakes drafts for so many years. It's just like, it's like old hat to him or something. But we came out of it. We hit the targets we wanted most of the time. I don't think there are any things where we're sniped too badly, or at least you kind of rolled with it, Brian. I know we wanted Miguel Vargas, for example. I kind of remember that, and he got taken, and I was bummed personally because I really wanted Miguel Vargas. But yeah, no, that's how I remember the draft. It was just like, I'm panicked trying to fill the queue, and you're just calm as a cucumber, just like systematically knocking off the targets you had, and like, you know what, let's go with a third baseman this time. And like, I would just couldn't believe it, because I was drenched in sweat by the end of it. It was very funny.
That's awesome. That's hysterical. It's hysterical. We had two going at the same time. I remember that now. We were multi-tabling, and it was pretty intense, which is, I don't know about get calm. It seemed like, I think you might be painting me in a favorable light there. I definitely get like some of these things. I get can't really eat for a few hours before the draft. I usually get pretty excited and lose my appetite. So, I think the draft, I do not like historically, obviously that would change now, but I do not like historically the first or the 15th or even really the second and the 14th type of picks. I usually like the fourth or the fifth, and then the 11, 12, 10, something like that. Because I like to capitalize on some perceived value that might drop throughout the draft and kind of be, I feel like, have some flexibility. I feel pretty comfortable adjusting a little bit on the fly. So like if some value were to, perceived value were to fall, I could take it and then pivot and do some of the things and kind of maneuver the draft. But in the ends, you're really just like, man, I hope these two guys get here, or two of these three, And then I think for the most part, we were pretty pleased, especially early on. I think later we did get sniped pretty hard, but I've got a few of our targets for sure.
Yeah, you were definitely, our first two picks for the listeners were Mookie Betts and Spencer Strider, and Brian was over the moon that we got both of those guys, because we thought that we wouldn't get both. We get one of them, and which way would we go? Would we go with like Strider and then figure out who our bat would be, or do we get Mookie and then figure out who our second pick will be? And we ended up getting both. And so that really set the tone right away. And I remember you were really chuffed, Brian.
I was very excited. That's true. And not to keep going on about, but I do have a couple different teams. I had already had Freddie Freeman and Austin Riley on different teams. So those guys were kind of out of the question at that point. So it was like really, you know, what my other options were there. I'm not too sure kind of some of the stuff we would have done, but Machado went right before. Machado went at 14, Bobby Witt at 13, Yordan Alvarez at 12, and then Vlad Jr. at 11. So left Strider and Betts.
Yeah. So certainly some luck there in terms of how the cookie crumbles, I suppose, and the draft in the first round fell, because that fell about as well as it possibly could have fallen for you guys, frankly. Right. So I thought Dylan had a really interesting tweet a couple days ago, sort of about the chase and what led up to, you know, getting to the top overall spot. Said May 21st, you guys were 480th place overall, 10th in the league as well. What changed from that point forward? Were there any waiver wire ads, you know, any players that all of a sudden just sort of busted out that you had in the roster? What changed at that pivot point, we'll say, of May 21st, where you guys started to ascend up the rankings?
So after I tweeted that, someone commented saying, were there, exactly your question, were there any pickups? And I went to Todd Whitestone, FTN Fantasy, does like a weekly kind of fab thing, and he did like a retrospective of the year about the team. And so I went to it to say, like, yeah, who did we pick up? Because I know he went over the pickups. And on May 21st, we picked up Tristan Casas, who was obviously kind of scuffling, but he was kind of doing well on my spreadsheet. And we talked about it, and we said, yeah, you know, let's bid. I think we bid like $80 for him, mm-hmm. which was fairly high. Like, we don't usually bid that high. Maybe this is all history. Oh, yeah, we had a Chris Boobage incident earlier that we don't speak about. Okay.
Delete this post.
But I think so what I do for all my leagues, and I did the same thing for this, is I have a spreadsheet of everyone's team. I have the whole league's team. I update the standings, and then I like have the projections, and I have like the projected standings, and kind of track how we're going and like what happens if we put this player in or that player in. And at one point, like I said to Brian, I don't know if it was May 21st, but I'm like, are we trying to win the league, or are we only focusing on the overall, like, and maybe sacrifice the league? And he's like, no question, he's like, we're doing the overall. Like, I don't care if I lose the league, we're going for the overall. And that completely kind of changed me, because I was just like, I'm here for the ride, and I want to, you know, win some main event leagues or something. And I'm like, what? I'm going to miss out on winning a league, but all right, let's do it. Let's do it. And so we completely changed, or I did, I completely changed our philosophy. And it was just look at the overall standings, just look at the overall like categories, forget the league, only know the league as like an input into how the fab dynamics are on Sundays when people are picking up, how the spends are, who people might be targeting, and how would that affect who we'd be able to get. It was kind of like the league was I know this maybe will sound bad, but like a distraction to they're an impediment to the overall goals. And I don't know if it was on May 21st. It probably wasn't. I think neither of us were probably that confident that we had a shot, because there's 795 teams. We're 480th, so we're in the bottom half. We're 10th in the league, like you said. And then we just started crawling up. And then at some point it became like, you know, we're in the top 100. And I think I'm talking too much, and Brian's the real champion here. But like the most fun was as we were getting down into like, we're in top 20. Oh, we're in 12. And like, we just like take screenshots of like when we cross over to like eighth overall, and like I'd send him the screenshot, and then he'd send me like seventh overall. And it's like that was like the most exciting part.
Yeah. That, Dylan makes me sound delusional, and I love it. I love it. I think that to be talking about first place while we're in like 483rd or whatever it was, but I was like, I think what was really interesting is Zach Waxman had kind of a where were these guys last year? And that makes no sense if you don't understand what I'm talking about. So basically he would kind of profile, say, okay, May 21st, the top 10, the guys who finished in the top 10, here's where they were ranked at this point in the season. And there were a couple of like, I think 300 something, 200 something. So it wasn't I think, you know, having played for a while as well, I didn't think that anything was necessarily set in stone, right? But I definitely did not think we were winning the overall at May 21st. So I just want to kind of clear the air with that. But what happened as well, like, there was Casas, but really, like, some of the things just kind of happened. Like, we kind of liked the team. And I don't think either one of us, you know, Dylan and I, did not think the team was as bad as it was playing. And so we had Blake Snell, who had I don't have the exact numbers, but a really rough April, right? And then he obviously, you know, goes on to win the Cy Young. We had Joe Musgrove. We got Joe Musgrove in the seventh round. He was hurt for like the first few weeks and even delayed a little bit beyond that. And then he comes out and then we threw him probably, you know, unwittingly in the Mexico game, right? And so he gets bombed in that game and it takes a while for those ratios to correct. We had Mookie Betts also started pretty slow. And then Corey Seager had his, I think it was like a hamstring or a quad thing, pretty early too. So all of those guys kind of rounding into their, like, you know, production that we kind of, you know, end of season look back at, that all started, I think, around, you know, early June and stuff. So that climb happened pretty quickly. We were just like, just need to kind of keep fighting through and stay healthy. And then obviously the Casas addition kind of started to put us on a trajectory that I think we could see even as it got to like 200. I was like, okay, all right. So yeah, that was kind of, I think, a summary of how we went from 43rd and the mindset there.
So you said, you know, it's late in August, you finally overcome the hurdle, you're first in the overall. Was there a point leading up to that, like after the trade deadline, maybe even like mid-July, because obviously it doesn't happen overnight, where your belief started to show up a little bit? Like there was faith in the team that you could potentially make a run. Because as you said, you know, 480th overall at that point, not typically a recipe for winning an overall contest, etc. When was it that, like, what was the turning point?
I don't, this is going to be me talking. I don't remember where it was, but we had Kyle Harrison, Blake Snell, Reese Olson, all playing, I think it was like Monday for a two start. And we were just hoping to get some Ks. And this might have even been Harrison's debut. And it was just like everything worked out. Like Olson struck out 10 and Snell struck out like 11. And then Harrison struck out like 12 reds. It was just like everything was just falling into place. And we gained like 140 points or something like that day. And it was like on top of the world. Also quickly falls apart. At that point, it was like we kind of like we had so much depth. It felt like on our pitching, we had depth in our hitting. The Mookie Betts getting like second short and outfield eligibility. Tommy Edman was second short outfield eligibility. Ryan McMahon was second and third. Yandy with first and third. Like we had a lot of flexibility. So it was kind of like we could put in the best hitter for that half week. Without much like worry. Like it's like, yeah, let's put this outfielder in or let's put the second baseman in. We don't have to kind of like sacrifice or compromise of like who we're going to end up taking out because we just take out the worst player because we could just rotate the pieces. That was very helpful. When we had a big lead-ish at the beginning of September. So what I did is, like an idiot, I took the weekly performance of everybody, all 795 teams, and I said, I tried to calculate if someone got to 6,700 points or 6,800 points, because it's harder to gain points as you get up to the top because you've kind of maxed out on certain categories. How do teams perform over the next 4 weeks once they hit 6,800? How do teams do for the next 3 weeks, et cetera, just to see how volatile is it once you get to the top? And it seemed pretty interesting. The average 4 week change once you got to 6,700, 6,800 was like negative. And we were gaining points. And so it just felt like what happens is like if you own any stocks and they're going up, you think it's going to go up for forever. Or once you're sliding, it's like this is never going to end. It just felt like, whoa, we're making positive gains. And it looks like this ride is never going to end. And then, of course, it did for the second week of September, third week of September, fourth week of September, just like we stagnated and panic started to set in, at least on my end, of like, it's going to be so devastating to have been holding on for 3 weeks in September in first place and then like maybe lose on the final like half week of the season. So I think there was a belief that it was feasible in September. We wanted, I wanted to be first place on September 1st, so I could say at least we're first place on September 1st. But it felt like it was actually feasible to me that we could do it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I don't know, Byron, what do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was kind of my thinking as well. Yeah. I think that day, I think it was Reese Olson, Severino, Harrison, and Snell. And I think we had our ratios really good to that point. So we were expecting some ratio damage. And I think they all went out and just had just gems. And so in some ways, I think if I look back, we could have had more points than strikeouts because this all happened maybe with, like, I want to say like 6 or 7 weeks to go. Probably 6 weeks to go. And then I look back and I'm like, man, I think we should have done a better job. Like, to finish with our ratios were kind of in the 99th percentile, but our strikeouts maybe more in like the 92nd percentile. And so we had some points to gain there, and we should have thrown more two starts, two steps, but we just didn't quite anticipate such a good week on that particular week. And then even that said, we were kind of mapping out our starts, and then we just had another week with about three, what was supposed to be the like third to last week, we should have had what we expected were three double starts from Reese Olson, Severino, and Harrison. Harrison gets sent down, Severino gets hurt, and then Reese Olson just never quite got his two steps. So, it's a little bit frustrating. And then, it wasn't complete lack of planning, but as I look at it now, or as I was looking at it, contemplating possibly losing, thinking, man, those strikeouts were what we really could, like, easy points to gain, somewhere along the way. So, yeah.
No, but that was exactly what happened, because Severino, that's right. Thanks for reminding me. Severino, it looked like he had turned the corner. Like, he was starting to get strikeouts now. He wasn't giving up like the five runs in four innings or whatever. And it's like he had strung together two good starts in a row. And it kind of sounded like, all right, he's back. And so we have this guy who now is going to contribute for the rest of the year. And Kyle Harrison's debuting and dominating. And it's like, okay, so we've got a Cy Young Award winner here now for the next month. Like, this is it. And then, as Brian said, it all kind of collapsed. Those three guys had to start. We had six starts lined up from guys we thought were going to contribute. And then we ended up with like one and lost two pitchers. And now how are we going to like backfill and have actual starters that we're going to have for the rest of the year? Like, I, for one, was definitely a bit worried about that.
Yeah.
Were there any like adds that you made over the last stretch here in terms of, you know, guys that you did end up backfilling with that worked out?
We got Grayson. I don't know what month. Hey, Brian, you can remind us. Grayson was struggling, as you know, at the beginning of the year, got sent down, and then you know, he was starting to get it together in AAA, and so we thought, you know, let's grab him because he is a stud. He has the pedigree. He can, and we've seen this many times where a rookie pitcher struggles, gets sent down, comes back up, and then turns the season around. So Grayson was a key one, and he was kind of a stalwart for us for the last few weeks. Like, I don't think he stumbled really at all. He was either he got the win, or he got strikeouts, or he got both. Our only fear, I think, was he may get shut down or reduced in innings because they don't want to, you know, overtax him. And if they're going to go deep in the playoffs, they may kind of hold him back a bit. But he was a key pickup at the end. But we also had a bunch of duds, I think. Like, we picked Jordan Lawler up. We overbid. Right. Like, the runner-up was $1, and we was like 20, 22 bucks or something like that. I don't remember. And that didn't work out. And that same week, we got Kyle Wright, who we thought might come up and maybe had kind of turned it around AAA, and he had some two starts lined up and stuff, and he didn't work out. But yeah, it was just more like we see the week ahead. We see what categories we need and who can help us. We look at the first half of the week. We look at the back half of the week. And then we just kind of make our picks and just try to optimize as much as we can. We didn't really spend too much on we didn't overbid on the Ellie De La Cruz's or Matt McClain's or the Bobby Miller's or Bryce Miller's or any of that like Fabapalooza stuff. We missed that. We went with Chris Bubich. That scared me that, you know, we spent $200 or whatever, and like, we got to like kind of pare it back. We may have overcorrected, but so we missed out on kind of like the big splashy ads. But I mean, clearly didn't need it necessarily. But yeah, I don't know, Brian, if you want to add anything. I feel like I'm talking too much.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was it. Like, I think we picked up Grayson, it looks like on June 4th, and he had been just sent to the minors. And so we probably sat on him for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, he comes up, and just imagine like for July, I think he was, July on pretty much just a mainstay in the rotation. So we lost Musgrove at some point, I want to say maybe 6 weeks to go. And then, you know, kind of just kept going. He was, you know, Musgrove from, you know, the first month and a half wasn't great, but I would say there was a 3 month stretch where he was a top, you know, maybe five pitcher or so, with no statistical background, no statistical backing for that. But like, he was just dominant. He was really good in carrying us for a while. So one thing that Dylan and Jeff, this won't surprise you, really good idea. So we use, you know, every week we would download the Razzball projections, right? Monday through Thursday and Friday through Sunday, and kind of, you know, have that as like just a dollar value guide of where some of these things are. Well, we were really doing very well in runs and batting average. And so Dylan then created his little Dylan adjusted dollar value for, I'd say that's about 6 weeks to go as well. And that then reweighted those projections based on our own category standings. So basically he found out the SGP for us versus what Razzball was using for like a neutral team. And so it more heavily weighted guys like, Drew Waters, or even like the last week, Joe Adell, you know, guys who probably gonna have a bad batting average, but you know, they might have some power, might have some speed. So those guys we were able to kind of put a more concrete dollar value, at least, you know, expected from what we were, where we sat. And so that was obviously great and super helpful, and not something I would have done or have done historically. Right. I just don't have that skill set, but more importantly, I would be looking at it going, well, I need steals. And so I would just say Jiwon Bae. Like, I wouldn't know the difference between Jiwon Bae and his three games versus Matt Wallner and his three games. right? If because we needed both power and speed. And so I'd have been like, I'm going to go with one or the other, you know, whichever. And he was able to kind of distill that into a number that we were able to use. So we did that and we really started breaking it down. Historically, I write out the 14 for each week. I write out the 14 batters on a pen and paper. And then I do my 9 pitchers with their matchups. As it started to happen, and as we were kind of getting into this, I think more probably around early August, I was doing two lists of the hitters, right? And so I would have their first half of the week dollar value and their second half of the week, again, using the Dylan adjusted value, and then really see like how we can maximize every dollar from there. So that was super key. Yeah.
The thing I liked about that too is we'd have the Rasball dollars in one column, and then we'd have these Dylan adjusted numbers that Brian's talking about in the second column. And you could see if there's a big discrepancy, if Rasball is saying like he's minus $6 for the week, but we're saying he's plus 12 for us, we know we can get that guy cheap. And so that would kind of inform our waterfall setups to know like, we're going to get this guy. And this guy is going to go for more because he's got a higher projection because he's going to get batting average, he's going to get runs, but we don't need him. So like, we don't have to have him near the top, or we should have him near the top, whatever as the case may be. So it was helpful to be very like team specific with the player raters. So yeah, I think that was helpful. I don't know if it was as helpful as Brian lets on, it was helpful, and it made us think that we were on the right track, that we were doing the right things and we're targeting the right things, and we had a process that was coming to fruition.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in the end, of course, you take down the title, you take down the main event. I don't know if there was a point, I know I was in communication with you, Dylan, on like Saturday and Sunday, but I don't know if there was a point on that day where you felt relieved at any point, or if it was like not until the final standings came out that you fully believed it and accepted that you had won.
I can't wait to hear this answer.
The whole week was nail biting. I had all the pitchers that all of our competitors had going and their relievers, and I'm like crossing them off and like, okay, this guy got pulled in the fourth. Okay, this is good. Or this reliever came in the seventh, and so that's good. And like just trying to map out like what is the actual feasibility of them catching up. And that thing I was saying about like the percentage that they could gain realistically in 5 days, in 4 days, in 3 days, etc. It was nail biting for a while. And then the second last day, so I guess Saturday night, we had a good day. We gained points. Second and third and fourth had kind of a middling, this is my recollection, I'm sure this is not accurate, a middling day, and they didn't really gain points. It's like their runway is done. They have the last day. We needed Toronto to clinch so Gausman would not pitch.
That's right.
And that, and they, of course, they didn't win, but Texas won. And I didn't want Seattle to win because then Kirby would pitch, but he ended up pitching anyway. And then we wanted Bradish, like the Orioles, to clinch. And so maybe Kyle Bradish is not going to have the two-start week. And so it looked like he was going to throw a short game on Sunday. That looked good. Pablo Lopez threw a short game. Sonny Gray threw a short game. Like all the guys that they had that they needed to come through were kind of getting knocked off. And it started getting good. And then Saturday night, we had a lead that looked insurmountable. And I think Brian and I were joking that like we got our first good night's sleep. literally of the last month, because it seemed good. I don't know if Brian wants to finish
no,
off or,
no,
or
that's
not.
It. That's about pretty much the trajectory. I think that the runway topic was key, right? Like until you get down to a certain number of days and you just do the math, it's just like it's really difficult for some of these guys. But even with 3 days, like felt good but not great, you know. And like I said, I think earlier, is like with a week to go, that on that Monday, I did not, I think we were, the favorites because we had a lead, but I think we were both very, very concerned about, the two teams right behind us, in addition to like other teams, but there's really two teams that had a very clear pathway. And if things went really well, and we're sweating it for sure. And then, Dylan kind of mentioned this earlier, is like we had stretches where we had, it's not going to last forever. And when it is happening, you think it's going to last forever. But sometime in August, I think we had 23 homers one week, like 23 homers, eight steals. And I'm like, this is great. Our team is great. We're going to keep doing this indefinitely. But then in September, middle of September, we had days where it was one home run, three RBIs, no steals. And you know, we didn't care too much about the average, but it was just days where you're just like, what is, are we ever going to get stats ever again? You know? And those were tough days because, you know, we have to wait another, you know, 16 hours or whatever it is, you know, for these games to start back up. And you're just sitting there waiting and hoping to, you know, things kind of change a little bit. So yeah, pretty intense.
That's unbelievable. Well, it was well worth it. And, you know, in the end, you guys end up taking down the prize. I guess the last thing I'll ask you guys here, and it might be nothing, but were there any big lessons, takeaways, anything you're going to hold on to going into next season outside of obviously just the victory? But, you know, even for seasoned players like you, I know, Brian, you're more seasoned in the main event space and high stakes space, but certainly we both would agree, having worked close with Dylan, but he is no slouch himself. So really, was there any like big takeaway lesson epiphany that happened from this season for you guys?
I will go first because Dylan's not talking. You know, I think that this team, it did stay really healthy. I want to say like that, like, you know, I think that to me, I think there's, you know, I was talking about this over the weekend with some friends. You know, I think that to get in a 795 team field, you have to both play really good and run really good, you know? And I don't want to take away anything from like, you know, those Otani teams. I mean, those teams were probably one injury. If it's a Mookie Betts injury instead of an Otani injury, you know, this probably unfolds differently, you know? So I think that the big takeaway, and even the final week, I did feel like, yeah, those teams didn't hit that point total, but it's not to say they couldn't. And in some ways, like a final table in poker, I think that, you know, you try to just get in that position. And if anybody, you know, I'm not an expert, but like if you're in that position and, you know, you have a chance in there, and that's kind of what you're really hoping for. I know some people, I'm thinking in particular of Phil DeSoto's 2021, had kind of put it to bed pretty early. But I mean, at least, you know, in that space when there's like 3 weeks to go, 4 weeks to go, and you're in that final 10, that's, you know, never, you know, think it's under, you know, completely under wraps, and that, you know, if you're outside the top three or four, like there's still a chance to kind of make that surge. I think, and realizing maybe that it's, there's got to be that component of running good as well. And, you know, you kind of just have to hope that happens. And really, I think that's, it makes it to me a little bit more like fickle, which I think is not necessarily a good or bad thing. I just think that this idea maybe that like I'm sure I'm guilty of this. I think I can outrun the variants, right? Like I'm you know, could just outwork and just do it. And then like, I could even weather the storm, you know, but really like, I think that I look up and I'm like, there were a lot of smaller moves that we made that at the time seemed just very small and end up working out and like being good 3 week plays that, yeah, you wouldn't have thought. So I think just, I don't know if it's humbling, but it's definitely like a really kind of created a clear picture to me of how things can change there, depending on who gets hot. And Evan, I'm just to keep going here, but like Evan Carter, I think you asked for common players. I think three of the top six teams, maybe, Dylan, correct me, but like they had Evan Carter, and you know, we did not. We had some lines where he was on it, but he was farther down. And then every time this is happening, we're just cringing because we, you know, not like we weren't familiar with Evan Carter, we just did not get him. And then, you know, watching on these guys have him. And I mean, if the season had gone on another week, you know, could have been a different story.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, it's like to bid on an Evan Carter in this example, like we have to drop someone. And if we like Andrew Benintendi, maybe he's not performing, but like probabilistically, Andrew Benintendi should do better than Evan Carter or Mitch Haniger, for example. Like it was like, I can't abide the idea of dropping like a veteran who's going to have, you know, six games played over this rookie who might become what Jordan Lawler was for us. So it's difficult for me to like want to invest heavily and then maybe have it be a zero. And then there's the opportunity cost of dropping someone for it. But then like, as Brian's saying, seeing like Zach Geloff or Matt McClain or Evan Carter just going on these tears and just keep putting up production is very difficult to watch. part of the thing too, of the way we built the team, and I don't know how deliberate it was, but we had batting average and we had ratios and pitching. So we didn't have to worry about it. We didn't have to have a great, like, 8-inning, no earned runs to gain points. We just needed strikeouts, and we had a cushion. So some of the teams are chasing us. They needed batting average, or they needed like ERA. And so like they had to have like 80 percentile weeks to gain points. And we didn't have to worry about that theoretically. Of course it ended up, we were worrying about it because we were in our 10th percentile or whatever it was. But in terms of what I learned or takeaways, so like I'd play TGFBI, which is the same format, 15 team league overall, same rosters, same fab, everything is on the NFBC platform. And I had some success there. And so I thought the transition to main event is basically the same thing, but just everything's sort of magnified because there's a larger financial investment and people take it more seriously, but it's a completely different world. Like just what Brian like showed me of like how it is. And like, I was a babe in the woods, not knowing anything, just this, the amount of detail in like the fab bidding and like the week to week structures and seeing how other teams had bid and like seeing their tendencies and their trends. And just, it's a completely different animal. I was completely ill-prepared. Like had I not had Brian like by my side being the captain and I had entered the main event on my own, like I would have been lost. So it's a completely different animal. It's high stakes fantasy baseball, and you can't go in with your eyes like going in naive. Like you have to have your eyes wide open because it's a completely different animal. I keep saying that phrase, but it's just what Brian's experience and steady hand and just like knowing how to navigate the site. Like he's like, here, I'll show you how to set up the bid so that we can get this guy. And then if we don't get him, we'll have him here. And then like, oh yeah, yeah. You can just put that as bid list number 6 and we'll never get to it because the only way to get to it is if we didn't get this guy in bid list 4, like all that stuff was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the logic of that was just like old hat to him. And I'm like struggling to try to figure out. And he's like, yeah, let me just show you what I'm trying to say. And I'm like, oh, okay, now I get it. So yeah, it's the lesson I learned was it's a very humbling experience. You can't go in with hubris and think, you know what you're doing. And it's like, this is just like the same thing as any other league or my home league. The stakes are higher, literally, and everyone's trying, and everyone's very good. So all the edges that you had are like much, much, much slimmer. So yeah, an experience I'll never forget, and honored that I did it with Brian.
There you go. I think it's a good place to end it. It's as you said, a completely different animal. It's the NFBC, the marsupial of the fantasy baseball world. Guys, I want to thank you for joining me and taking some time to sit down, let you get back to enjoying your victory and your large cash prize that you've taken home. Hopefully Uncle Sam doesn't take too many taxes out of that because you earned every dollar for sure. This is really insightful, and I hope all of our listeners got something out of it. And all the more reason to listen to Dylan, because he knows what he's doing. So take his advice and ignore mine on all future podcasts. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Dylan, for Brian, I am Jeff. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.